Good morning and welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we're going to be focusing on Yechezkel Perek Yud Tes, the 19th chapter of the book of Yechezkel. And this Perek is essentially two parables of the state of the Jewish nation. And they are a parable of the lion cubs and the parable of the vine. In fact, the word parable perhaps might not be the best way to describe it, because the word used in Hebrew here is kina, which essentially means to say a lamentation. So this is not so much just simply a parable or some sort of figurative description. This is actually already a lamentation on what's about to happen, what is happening as this is being given over. So let's start at the beginning, the lion cubs. What is the first thing? This runs from the first nine psukim in this parak. So where Yechezkel says that a mother lion has her cubs and they rest safely among the rest of the lions. One of the cubs gets stronger and starts learning to kill, and it kills a human being. And because of that, he was hunted down by the nations and taken in chains to Egypt. That was cub number one. When the mother saw that the cub taken away to Egypt was not returning, she appointed another cub to be leader. And this one also walked among the nations, started learning how to kill, and did a lot of destruction in the land. Even in his roar, there was desolation here, as is said in this a parable, and the nations banded together and sent enemies to trap him, and they finally sent him in chains down to the king of Babylon. That is the end of this first partial, of this first parable. What in the world is going on over here? So let's start at the beginning. Who is the first cub? So we assume that they were probably talking about some sort of king of the nation of Israel, and there's only one king we know who was taken in captivity down to the land of Egypt, and that is Yehoahaz. Now let's just put things in perspective. Let's get the historical narrative clear here. Towards the end of this era, let's focus on the last five kings quickly. So there was Yoshiyahu HaMelech, who was a tremendous king. He was a great king who brought about a huge amount of teshuvah, of returning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He lived a very wonderful life, and he was praised and praised by the prophets, praised by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a very special human being. He was killed by Paro Nechoi, when Pharaoh wanted to walk through the land of Israel going up north, and he disallowed that and was killed in battle against Pharaoh Necho. Immediately following Yoshiah is when the downturn starts for Israel, and his son Yehoahaz, who we're talking about now, becomes the king. He's only king for about 3 months, because when the Egyptians come back, they are very upset with him, and they take him in captivity to Egypt, never to be heard of again. Instead, the Egyptians put their yes man in charge, and his name is Yehoiakim. He was called Eliakim, but his name was changed to Yehoiakim. He was a bad king. He didn't listen to Yirmiyahu. He imprisoned Yirmiyahu, did terrible things, and essentially rebelled against Bavel, against Yirmiyahu's best wishes and advice from Hashem, and was ultimately deposed of by the Babylonians. His son, Yehoiakim, the son of Yehoiakim, was placed in his spot for 3 months, but Yehoiakim as well fought against the Babylonians and was taken in captivity along with Yechezkel to Bavel. And finally, the last king was Zedekiah HaMelech, who had the last 12 years of ruling, and he was the king who ultimately brought about, or was there at the time of destruction. So the clear that cub number one must be Yehoiakim, who was that intermediate king, the son of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, who was deposed by Egypt because he was taken in chains down to Egypt. So it means to say that he got too strong and the Egyptians deposed of him. Who is cub number two? So the possibility number one in the Pshat could be the following. The Da'at Mikra, which is one of the academic explanations on Tanakh, it says the following very fascinating insight. And that is the following. That if you look at it, if we're talking about over here a cub who has the same mother, well, who is the mother of Yehoiakim? Her name was Chamutal. Chamutal was the wife of Yoshiyahu HaMelech. Her other son was Tzidkiyahu HaMelech. So Tzidkiyahu and Yehoiakim were brothers. Which means that if we're talking about the same mother of two kings, potentially this could be Yehoahaz and his brother Tzidkiyahu. The difficulty of this explanation is that at this point in time, Tzidkiyahu has not been taken to Bavel yet, like the second cub is described as being taken. So either this could be a prophecy about the future, or perhaps it's not Tzidkiyahu. So what the classic Mefarshim, Rashi, Radak, Mitzvah say is that the second king is Yehoiakim. Yehoiakim, even though he's not from the same mother as his predecessor Yehoahaz. Nonetheless, the mother over here might be Knesset Yisrael, might be the nation which begets such a king. And it's not a criticism on one particular individual, one particular mother in the nation, but rather the nation itself for producing such leaders. And the criticism is, how could the nation of Israel produce such leaders? And Jehoiakim certainly had been taken to Babel at this point in time. What was the crime? What was going wrong over here? So the way it's described is that this cub started getting ferocious and vicious and attacking and killing human beings. What does that mean? So it sort of says that, and as some of the many of the Mephoshim say, is that means taking advantage of others in society. Meaning, the Jews, we know that Jehoahaz and Jehoiakim after him took great advantage of the low-income people in society to pay the taxes they needed to Egypt. And that was seen as a terrible fault, and they are held accountable for it. Whereas the Radak says, no, very simple. When a lion attacks a human being, that's a grave mistake, because it's attacking a being who's much more powerful than it, and that being will hunt it down and kill it. So essentially what's being talked to about over here is that he attacked Pharaoh. He attacked the king of Egypt, Jehoahaz, who was too powerful for him. And later the second cub attacked Babel, who was too powerful for him. Like Yirmiyahu had said in both cases, don't raise your hand. Sublimate yourselves, because you don't have the schus right now. And that was what's happening over here. Then we move into the second part of the perek, which is the mashal, or the parable of the vine. We're told that imcha kagefen bedomecha, you are similar to this vine, which is almaim shesula, planted on the great waters, poriyah va'anefa ha'isamimayim rabbi midrash, very luscious, very strong, has these matos oiz, these strong branches, which rule the things around it. It's very high, it's a strong trunk. Vayera begavhoi beroiv dal yosav. And it looks fearful, looks powerful, because of among all the others, because of its tallness and its strength. But then ultimately, the vine got uprooted, it dried out, its entire strength was sapped. It was replanted later on, but in a desert where there was no water, and it caught a light and was burnt and burnt its own fruit. And this will be the lamentation. What's the second parable about? So the Malbim says that up till now we've discussed the kings of Jehoahaz and Jehoiakim. Now the second one is Tzidkiyahu. This is a mashal about Tzidkiyahu. Tzidkiyahu, in fact, was a tzaddik, as we know the Gemara tells us. It was his generation which were rotten, but ultimately he had the potential of being a strong bastion, but ultimately he looked too strong for the Babylonians. Ultimately, he was a threat to the Babylonians, and therefore he was the victim of circumstance when they wanted to uproot him and replant him in Golos, and he no longer had the chance to survive in the same way. Whereas some of the other Mepharshim say, so for instance, if you look at the Radak and the Metzudos, they say, no, this is not referring to a specific discrete king. This is referring to a historical, longitudinal description of Israel. At the beginning, they had strength. At the beginning, they had strong kings. Kings who knew how to rule their nation, knew how to defend their nation from the people on the outside. But in the end of the day, as the time progressed, the kings became weaker, they became uprooted, they weren't taking advantage of the water that they were planted nearby, and ultimately they were burnt up and went to God. So it's more of a longitudinal description. The last point to take note of over here is that the Abarbanel points out, where does the fire come from? The fire comes from itself. The sad part over here is when the fire spreads, it comes out from its own branches, which means to say that ultimately the end was self-imposed. It became the fuel for its own destruction, this vine, because ultimately we could have avoided it. We brought it upon ourselves. As the Da'at Mikra summarizes the end of this section, is that from afar, from Babylon, sometimes there's more perspective than in the actual forest itself in Yerushalayim. And from afar, what they see is they see the destruction happening. They see the destruction unfolding. And now, as opposed to a tone of reprimanding, of criticism, it's actually turning into mourning. We know the destruction is imminent, and therefore the mourning has begun. And that's the tone of this parak, of a kinnah rather than a criticism. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.